This is a podcast from Minute Media. This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw up against the wall.
Can't explain it, what I'm feeling right now, guys. Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's 45-27 loss to the Oregon State Beavers at the Coliseum for the first time since 1960. The last time USC lost to Oregon State at the Coliseum, Ted Williams was still playing baseball. JFK had yet to be elected. The Flintstones was still not on TV. It's been that long, and SC loses again. 45-27, back-to-back home losses for the Trojans, losing to Stanford a couple weeks ago, and now to Oregon State. USC is 1-1 in the Dante Williams era. A resounding second-half win last week, and a resounding second-half
puke emoji.
Sure, yeah. This week, I'm your host, Michael Castillo, journalist with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Before we started recording, I said, I don't think we're going to go that long, which I know is a death sentence for us.
It's never happened.
Yeah, it's a death sentence. But what is there to say?
Well, I mean, I even put in the Slack, like, we don't even get to have the debate about whether or not USC should fire Clay Helton after that loss. Like, it's just, it is what this USC team is. It was nothing new.
No.
It was.
Well, there's one thing new that I didn't expect.
What was that? The defense.
It's the severity of the defensive breakdowns. I'm honest with you right now. I think this was the worst defensive showing I've seen out of a USC team in my lifetime. Find a worse one.
This
is it. Oregon 2012.
Well, but Oregon and
but Oregon 2012 had Marcus Mariota and Kenyon Barner and those guys.
I was gonna say
it was a Chip Kelly offense.
So here's my thing. I have a lot of respect for what Jonathan Smith has built at Oregon State, and I think the offense is their strength, right?
Yes, and not to cut you off here, but if Jonathan Smith was not an Oregon State grad, we'd be talking about him in that discussion.
Yes, actually, yeah, that's something that I saw on Twitter. People going like, "Why isn't Jonathan Smith getting talked about?"
Because he's an OSU grad, and I just can't
see him leaving. No. Yeah. I mean, he could. Who knows? But I have a ton of respect for what he's done with Oregon State, and this is now his signature win. And I'm almost like, part of me is at the point where I'm just like, well, good for you, Beavers.
I'm happy for him that it's correct, because we talked about it a couple years ago. SC didn't play Oregon State in 2019 when they went 5-7. They went started the year 5-5. Literally, they were going to go to a bowl game and all that stuff, and we're like, they look kind of like a good team.
Well, and last year they
gave everyone a game.
And I mentioned in the preview that, like, I saw some people asking the question when they lost to Purdue, like, at what point do we start expecting more? Like, at what point are we not happy with just the moral victories or whatever of playing people close? And I think this is a reward for that program to get this monkey off their back as far as the Los Angeles streak and all of that. But My point being, as much respect as I have for the Oregon State Beavers and what Jonathan Smith has done, this offense is nowhere near the 2012 Oregon offense.
No.
Or
no.
Talent-wise, I don't think it's comparable to the 2013 ASU team that beat up USC, that got Lane Kiffin fired. I don't think it's comparable to Christian McCaffrey Stanford.
Nope.
You know, I don't know that there that there's a great comparison. What I will agree with you, and I think that what stood out in this one was
it was everything.
Well, this is a question that I have, is there were breakdowns of the normal sort that we've mm-hmm. seen. There was physical getting out toughed in the trenches.
Yep.
There was just, it felt like these aren't breakdowns, these are physical beats. You're getting
literally
pushed
everything.
Around.
Yeah.
And then there was also, at a certain point, did this team just give up? Like, did the team just stop feeling like that, like they were it felt like they were done. Like, it felt like they were done. And I think that is the thing that stands out to me, is as I'm not sure even the Clancy Pendergast defenses that just fell apart, I'm not sure I had the same feeling of this team just does not believe that this is going to happen. And I think that's the talking point that comes out of this game, is like, and I saw a quote from Graham Harrell saying that when the adversity struck, that they just sort of like they fell apart or whatever. And yeah. I keep going back to that, the Clay Helton quote after the Stanford game where they got shell shocked. There's a mental toughness problem going on here. And that is evident in the two home losses that USC has suffered, where
yeah.
things just snowballed out of control. And the funny thing is, things snowballed in the right way against Washington State.
Yes.
But
they didn't for the first 29 minutes of that game.
So it's like this team is the two extremes. It's the... There's a switch of the flip and a flip of the switch, and suddenly you're all good, or flip of the switch and suddenly you're all bad. I don't know.
I think part of it, and I don't want to read too much into this, but I think part of it is, first of all, I don't put too much stock into what players say after the games,
mm-hmm.
because I think a lot of it is, we talk about coach speak a lot, right?
No, there's absolutely player speak.
But there's player speak. And
yeah.
A lot of it is, well, how do you need to get better? Well, we need to execute, blah, blah, blah. And it's not really saying much, right? And I don't blame players for that at all. Like, it's just how it is, right?
Well, because at a certain point, what can you say?
What
most of
say?
The time,
right.
there is nothing to say. So
100%. But one of the things that I want to say was Isaiah Polamalu mentioned after the game was, our defense is sort of predicated on making plays. And Chris Steele talked about this too. And like, it's on us to make the plays, and we put our guys, and they're basically saying that the defense puts guys in positions to make 1v1 plays. And when you don't make those plays, everything goes to hell.
Yeah.
And so I think the problem is when you have a defense that is predicated on creating flashpoints every single play. When it works your way, everything's going to snowball in your direction. When it doesn't, you end up with things like this. And really what we've seen for the longest time, we saw this with Clancy Pendergast, and we definitely saw it with Todd Orlando. Up until the last couple of weeks, they've been a little bit different. But where this is a team who's susceptible to giving up the big play, because, again, if you're winning your one-on-one battles, then you're fine, but the one time
all
you don't,
it
might be the one big player. We saw that against Stanford early on with the big long run. But outside of that, they stopped the run completely against Stanford, right? I think Stanford had like 2 yards outside of that long run, right?
Yeah, or that was absolutely not the case tonight.
Absolutely not the case tonight. And to me, this is why this was worse, was because you looked at like the chunk plays. And Oregon State only had one technically long run, which is a 40-yard run by B.J. Baylor early in the third quarter. But they had, at that point, it was like 8 or 9 10-yard runs. They were just killing you with 11, 12, 13-yard runs.
Yeah.
And those were consistently because they were just putting up holes. They were just creating gaping holes in the offensive line. They were running the fly sweep, jet sweeps, whatever you want to call them. And SC didn't have an answer for those. And then they would build off of those and create other things. And then on top of this, and this to me is even bigger the thing, is that usually when SC has a breakdown game, I think of the Stanford game from 2 weeks ago. SC stopped the run. Yes, they gave up that 87-yard touchdown run, but that was one play. And again, beyond that, they didn't give up anything on the ground. Literally nothing on the ground.
Yeah.
They stopped the run. That was the game plan, stop the run, blah, blah, blah. But they were susceptible to the pass. It's the whole, like, you got a blanket, you got to cover your head or your toes, you got to pick something, right? I'm not saying that's an excuse, but, like, that's what ends up happening in these situations usually.
Sometimes you pick your poison and you're drinking poison.
Right, yes. In this game, there was no poison being drank.
Yeah.
It was just, they got the poison in every sense.
What was the game plan? Like, what were they trying to take away from Oregon State? they didn't seem to take away a single thing.
No, they were susceptible to the pass. They were susceptible to the scramble. They were susceptible to the run.
Interior runs, exterior runs, they literally could not
stop anything.
Yeah.
The only time they stopped Oregon State is when Oregon State shot themselves in the foot. Which they did plenty of times in this game. SC's offense did that too, and we're going to talk about that later. But the defense, I've never seen a defensive breakdown that was this bad. And again, you can look back to the Stanford games with McCaffrey, but McCaffrey is the best player that SC has faced in the last 15 years.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly the best player USC has played.
He's should have won the
Heisman. Should have won the Heisman Trophy, right? Marcus Mariota, you can argue, might be number two on that list.
He was a...
Right?
Did he go number one that year or number two? Yeah, like...
He did win the Heisman.
It's one thing to get beat up by Heisman winners.
Yes.
Or Heisman candidates. It's another to get beat up by Oregon State.
Yeah, the only other game I think this could compare to is Boston College. But Boston College did it in a one-dimensional way.
And Boston College was all on the road.
Yeah, it was all on the ground. It was on the road. It was the 9/11 tribute game, all that stuff. It was coming after the Stanford loss.
Yeah.
Again, none of those are excuse, but SC at least sort of was in it at the end, kind of not really. But this game was not that because SC was susceptible to the pass. Oregon State didn't throw the ball a lot, but when they did, they had massive success. So SC couldn't stop anything. And then when you compound that with what happened on offense, which was this situation where we can talk about the third quarter being just horrendous for SC offensively and defensively. But I think SC lost the game in the first half because they had so many opportunities. The only time SC was stopped in the first half is because they did it to themselves.
Literally, yeah.
Yeah, they had the...
The drops.
The drops.
Taj Washington, a drop led to an interception.
Taj Washington had the ball in his breadbasket.
And it just
and
popped
it rolled
up.
Off of him to go into a defensive back's hands for Oregon State, and it's an interception.
Yeah.
Later on in that first quarter, he's wide open for a first down. And starts running before he catches the ball.
Yeah.
Drops the ball. That would have been a first down. Two plays later, Drake London does the same exact thing.
Yep.
In the second quarter, there's a little comeback route where on third down, Taj Washington goes to get it and off his hands. It would have been a first down. They have to punt. And so, like, that's two direct drives that ended because of a Taj Washington drop. And he's not the only guy dropping it. So I don't want to just say that this is Taj Washington's fault.
Drops were generally a problem, but it was the nature of those drops. It doesn't really matter who was having the drops. It's that they were coming on third down. They were ending drives. They were ending series. And I think that they played a huge role in the whole Graham Harrell, like when adversity struck thing. I think it just the offense looked like it could tear their way through Oregon State's defense.
The running game looked great.
But I loved
how they were getting
Keontae Ingram
involved like a in the passing game too.
But what ended up happening is slowly that you could just see the confidence of the entire offense erode until they just had nothing.
Right.
And I think Keaton Slovis is a really good example of this because I think he looked fine early on in the game. He had the interception that really was not his fault. The only complaint I have about that interception was that he rolled into pressure and had to make a more difficult throw than I think he needed to. I think if he stands in the pocket, he has more time. But whatever, he still made the throw and the receiver let him down. Keaton was fine in the early goings. But just the steady stream of here's a drop there, here's a penalty there, here's a missed throw there or whatever. The steady stream of that, I don't think he ever got into a rhythm really. And he never gained his confidence. And my big thing about this game was going to be Keaton Slovis's confidence. That was going to be like my number one storyline for this whole thing was he looked dejected on the sideline last week. And what I wanted to see from him was a big bounce back game. And it just, a few things didn't go USC's way. And you could just see the weight of things not going their way gather.
Yeah, and then the irony is, what went well the best for SC in this game? I think it was Keaton Slovis. I think when Slovis was on in this game, it was the offense. I mean, the offense was able to put together drives in the first half that they moved the ball really smoothly.
A great and it should have been a red zone touchdown.
It should have been a shootout. If the defense was going to be that poor, then it should have at least been a shootout because the SC's offense was doing their part. But no, you had all these little mistakes. Yes, they were gifted penalties, but they had all these other mistakes that were besides the point.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, you can say that they canceled out. They don't really do that because the breakdowns were on third down for the most part. Then they had to punt the ball away. But yet you can say that when SC was at their best in this game, it was because Keaton Slovis had some confidence going.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just short bursts. And then when SC was at the worst in this game on offense, it was because there was no confidence in not just Keaton Slovis, but anyone.
Yeah.
Anyone on the offense. Well, and I don't know how you could. I don't know how you could have confidence given the way everything was going. I mean,
and then later in the game, you know, I think that the offensive line looked like they were losing confidence.
There was the third and one that goes. Then back-to-back false starts, and then it's third and 11.
Yeah, the offensive line starts making mistakes, and I think there's a element of, I think, Oregon State's defense started to grow into the game and get more confidence, and that sort of the weight of USC's offense losing confidence and Oregon State's defense gaining confidence definitely doesn't help things, but it was the inverse of last week. It really was. It was the inverse of... So all of a sudden, things just started going wrong, and they kept going wrong, and it impacted the entire team across the board. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, and I've talked about this many, many times. I go softer on the defense because I tend to expect less of them, just based on the talent that USC has on offense. But like, it just felt like. The same way that the offense fed off the defense, fed off the offense, fed off the defense in the third quarter last week. It's like the defense fed off of the offense not getting it done. And the offense fed off the defense not getting it done. And it was like a very negative feeding. And the whole thing just went absolutely wrong. And that's, I think that's a tough place to be in if you're a team that has an interim head coach that, has all the questions hanging overhead and like part of me doesn't blame them, but also you just like there to be more mental toughness going on there. I spent much of this game sitting to myself thinking like USC's next head coach needs to watch this game, sit down and look at the tape and watch this game and sort of, I don't know if it's the culture needs to change, the mentality, if there needs to be a culling of players who fit or don't fit a better mindset or whatever. But like, this game needs to be an example to the next coach of this is
the, you can't let this happen.
Yeah. And you need to figure out, why did this happen? Why did this particular game happen? Yeah, I get why Stanford happened. Why did this game happen? And how do you reverse that?
Yeah, and the tough thing is, you know, it's weird because Dante Williams talks about accountability, 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 and not accepting mistakes and making yourself better every day and all those things. And I think that those things written out or said are all the right things. Those are what SC should be saying. It should be what SC is buying into and all that stuff. But yet, the results are not here. And I am going to give Dante Williams all the leeway in the world there, because it's not like you can just implement anything mid-season.
The offense and defense remain the same.
Yes, it remains the same. It's the same schemes, right?
Yeah, same players.
And you can't just completely reprogram everyone from their mind, their scheme, their psyche, all that stuff. You can't reprogram it overnight.
Well,
and this is a very difficult task for Dante Williams.
This is why
he's never been a head coach before.
This is why often you see these coaching changes happen during a bye week, because if you needed to reset stuff, if you needed to say, okay, we're going to do something different, at least you then have a bye week.
Sure. Yeah. And SC didn't have the bye week, but they beat Washington State nonetheless. And then here they are and everything. And it's tough because it's on one hand, well, why is SC losing these games? And I think you can look to it and go, like, things snowball. They don't know how to withstand adversity right now. And they're crumbling and they're letting things snowball. Helton has talked about the shell shock thing. The players after the game talked about, you know, it sometimes it does feel like you need to press. Harrell talks about how there wasn't the juice on the sideline kind of thing. These things are out there, right? And so you would think that being more accountable and all that stuff would be the solution to that. But it's easier said than done. Words are words. Actions are another thing.
Accountability matters during the off season.
I think so too. Like, I think it's very difficult. And I know that one of the things is people want accountability because they want people to pay for things. If there's a mistake, they want a direct response to that, right? And I know it's not satisfying, but you can't always get a direct response to things.
Yeah.
Like okay, if someone makes a bad penalty, I'm annoyed that I can't remember who said that. If this was a Dante Williams quote or if this was something else I heard of, it's been in my head for the last few weeks and it bothers me. I don't remember where I heard it. But it was a coach talking about how difficult it is to decide about accountability in the middle of a game because different players are different. Some guys you need to bring out for a game and sit them for a game if they make a mistake. Other guys, you can't sit them because the way their psyche is, they need to go back out there, and you're better off knowing they know that they messed up, and they're going to be better off going out there and making up for it, and they're going to help your team by making up for it on the next play kind of thing. And so part of that is difficult, so I don't know that you can just make this flat rule of like, oh, well, you got a penalty, so then you're out for the rest of the drive, because that's not going to fit everything. A one-size-fits-all rule is not going to fit everything for everybody. So I have some leeway with the whole accountability thing.
But you set that tone in the off season. You set that tone, and that's where it comes into play. And then you have your little policies for penalties or whatever. But like, in the middle of a season, just saying, okay, now everyone, you're gonna come out of the game if you get a penalty, or you're gonna do push-ups if you get a penalty or whatever. It's like, that's not real accountability. That's just icing. So again, these are things that I don't think Dante Williams can change overnight.
Right.
I don't think any interim head coach can change overnight. And I think that this is also a team that's gone through some weird adversity. And I don't know, like, you know what it is? It's when you're like really enthusiastic about a new workout routine or whatever. And like, I do this all the time. I feel really good when I work out. When I go on a hike or when I go on the treadmill or I go for a run, like I feel really good. I feel really amped up. I'm like, I'm committed. I'm doing this thing. And then you go like the next day and it's like, yeah, 2 day streak. I'm on it. And then you sort of get to like the third day and you're just like, okay, but now I'm tired. And like, maybe I can skip today. And then so like basically the Washington State game was the I'm hype. I'm amped up. Let's go. Let's go. And then like the reality settled in this past week and suddenly it's like, well, no, actually it's kind of hard to like keep up that kind of energy.
Yeah.
To keep up that perception perspective. And it all just came crumbling down. And I don't know that it's Dante Williams' fault. I don't know that it's an individual player's fault. I just think that this is what happens when you've had erosion and sometimes just the thing collapses and they don't have anything left to give.
Well,
like,
well, this is the other thing is so much of, you know, and I know this is misguided, but so much of what I take from games is looking at what other people are saying. And a lot of this comes from Twitter and what people are tweeting us, what other people are tweeting, etc. And I saw a lot of people tweeting us like, oh, can you fire Todd Orlando? Can Dante Williams make more changes and whatnot? And this goes to the thing of like,
so like
they've already fired the head coach.
From a practical sense, let's walk through this. Let's say you fire Graham Harrell. Okay. So you want who? Mike Jinks, or you want
Kerry
Colbert,
run,
or you want,
they're gonna run Graham Harrell's offense.
Like what? Yeah. What do you think? So you're just gonna elevate like, another grad assistant into an assistant role?
I know this is not satisfying, but there's not a GA on the staff who has like the keys to unlocking it.
Well, do they think that the GA on the staff is going to do a better job running the defense than like Todd Orlando, who's their seasoned defensive coordinator?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like you look at the defensive staff. There's nobody else who's been a defensive coordinator before.
Yeah.
So
certainly not for an entire season.
And I understand that look to the future. Who cares? You can't do worse. Like I get that mentality, but that's just not how it works.
But you can also do worse. Like you can do worse. You can lose every game from here on.
I don't
know.
I mean, did you see the defense tonight? But
yeah,
the point is that. So
yeah, but did you see Utah's offense against Washington State? Like, not everyone is Oregon State. Not everyone has their crap together on offense. Like it will get better on defense. It will get better on offense, we can hope. But, like, also, let's be real here, guys.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple more big picture stuff, and then we'll wrap this thing up. All right, Alicia, we brought up the Twitter stuff. I want to get to one of the questions that we saw floated out on Twitter. You guys on Twitter were very adamant. And I thought this was genuinely, I thought it was fascinating that the narrative coming out of this game, a game in which SC allowed more than 300 rushing yards for the ninth time since Pete Carroll was the head coach, and in abysmal fashion because they got gassed through the air too, and they were abysmal, awful, right? I think it was 8.8 yards per play in the first half, Oregon State had. And yet, all Twitter wanted to talk about was how bad the offense was. And there were so many calls for Keaton Slovis to be benched. I think SC fans, certainly on Twitter, are completely out on Keaton Slovis. Done with him. Don't want to see him ever again. People wanting Miller Moss. The interesting ones I saw were tweets that were like, Keaton Slovis is a mobile statue quarterback. We need someone with energy. Bring in Miller Moss, which this... I don't think answers your question there.
No.
But let's talk
also,
about...
Also, bring back JT Daniels.
why stop there?
I mean, go get Matt Leinart. I don't know.
No, let's talk about Miller Moss and the Miller Moss question. He is QB3, or was QB3.
He was QB4, let's be real.
He was QB4.
Mo Hassan was the backup quarterback coming into the season, kids.
Yes. And then Mo Hassan tears his ACL. We don't know where that would have... Now I'm sort of intrigued. What would have happened in the quarterback battle? Would Mo Hassan have gotten 3 and Dart 2?
No, Mo Hassan would have been the backup. Yeah.
You think Mo Hassan would have beaten out Dart for QB2?
I'm very confident that Mo Hassan would have been QB2, yes.
Okay. All right. Let's just... Either way,
yeah.
Miller Moss was QB3 as of 7 days ago.
Yeah.
And then Jackson Dart ends up tearing his meniscus, and he's out. He's week to week, says Dante Williams. Probably like 4 to 6 weeks.
Which is, by the way, just as a... Let's just do this quick aside. What? That's such a farce. Like, he had surgery. He's out for a few weeks. Don't insult our intelligence and act like he might play next week. He's not playing next week. You're creating more of a distraction than by saying he's day-to-day, week-to-week, whatever. Like,
well, I
just get it. Like, he's not playing. Stop it. Stop.
I would rather hear, in that situation, he's out, we don't know when he'll be back, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to be coy, I get it.
Yeah.
Every coach in college football is coy, and SC has had this transparency thing because Pete Carroll and because professional sports down and all this stuff, that transparency thing does not translate to anywhere else.
Yeah.
So every other college football coach is secretive, super secretive, right? Yeah. So I get that aspect of it. But like, yeah, if you don't want to share when he'll be available.
Oh, yeah, I don't need them to.
Don't share.
Yeah.
But then the week-to-week thing.
He had surgery on a torn meniscus.
Yes.
He's not going to be back.
Yes.
But okay, let's get back into the conversation.
Talk about the thing.
Miller Moss, the kid who no one outside of people who have practiced has seen throw a pass, and the kid who is a true freshman
did not play last season.
Who did not play
his year got COVIDed.
Yes. So like, okay, I get that people are done with Keaton Slovis, but like Miller Moss was not going to be. Miller Moss is not Jackson Dart in the sense that, like, Miller Moss might be a fine quarterback, but he isn't the mobile dynamic threat that Jackson Dart is.
Yes, which is why that I think there's a valid case for Jackson Dart being better for the offense.
Yes.
Because he brings a mobile element that can help the offense systemically because it keeps the defense honest.
Which,
I think it's a valid argument.
Which is like the perspective I'm at is that if Jackson Dart were healthy this week, I think we probably would have ended up seeing him get thrown into this
Absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. I think it comes
just
from the game.
Just as a clearly we need something. We need a spark. Like that's the spark that was missing. Like you can find that from Jackson Dart.
Yeah.
You don't find that from Miller Moss.
I don't think you get that from Miller Moss. And that has nothing to do with Miller Moss.
No, but Miller Moss is a true freshman. Neither Jackson Dart nor Miller Moss should be playing this year.
Yes.
But of the two, Jackson Dart's the one that makes more sense to just throw in and see what he can do. Like Miller Moss has no business playing this year.
No, and
so why are people treating him as a savior? Like he's not a savior.
Because this is how quarterback narratives are.
Yeah.
And I understand it's a human psyche, right? We have seen Keaton Slovis for 2.5 years. We've seen him make every mistake in the book.
Mm-hmm.
We know what his warts look like. We know what all of his mistakes are. We know the scent of his poop, right? You know what I mean?
Well, okay.
Figuratively,
here.
You get what
that's
I mean?
That's a word, though. That's a phrase, phraseology there that I didn't need in
it's,
my life.
It's
but
like 2 a.m.
Yes. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, we know the bad
we know
things
the good
just
and
like
the bad.
We know the good things,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is a, and this is independent of Miller Moss. I mean, it has nothing to do with Miller Moss specifically. You haven't seen his warts. You haven't.
But the, here's the funny
thing. You haven't seen his mistakes.
You haven't seen his mistakes, but you also haven't seen him do anything good either.
Yeah, so that like, doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. You haven't seen his mistakes. People aren't mad at Keaton Slovis because of his good things.
Yeah.
People are frustrated with the bad things.
Yeah.
And so when you consume it with the bad things and the detractions, well, Miller Moss has had no visible detractions because we've never seen him. And so then one of the arguments for playing Miller Moss is, well, look towards the future. Look toward the future. SC needs to look towards the future because why not? Mm-hmm. And I put this on Twitter earlier in the week. I think as fans, I think as media, I think as anybody outside the room, not connected to the team, absolutely look to the future.
Right, I mean, now, that's what I was saying about, you know, I'd rather watch Jackson Dart. I'd just rather watch him. That's it.
Who are we, like, what team are you most intrigued about right now? It's the 2022 Trojans,
yeah.
Is it not? Like,
yeah.
We're going to talk about coaching candidates for the next 2.5-3 months. We're going to talk about, like, the future. For really the next 12-11 months, we're going to talk about the future.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be, like, craving to know about this team, what they're going to look like 11 months from now. Because in our minds, you listening to this and us talking about this, that Clay Helton has been relieved of his duties. We're looking towards the future, right? We're on to 2022 mentally. I think it's only right in that case. Yeah, if this was like a video game or the NFL where you're, or any professional sports league where you tank. Yeah, play the young guys. See what you got. Make mental notes of players and all that stuff. That's not this game. And it's also, I think it's, you got to remember that the coaching staff does not have the luxury of looking to the future. The coaching staff, they're playing for their jobs. Dante Williams is playing for his job. Graham Harrell is playing for his job. Tyler Lando is playing for his job. All those guys are playing for their jobs. They don't have the ability to take the next 3 months and think about what is best for the development of the 2022 Trojans,
well,
or the 2023 Trojans. Like,
also,
they don't have that. What's in the best
also
interest
of them? Also, there are players on this team who are playing for NFL stock.
Yes.
Like, you know, those guys don't want to just tank. Like, no one on this team wants to tank the season.
Yeah.
Who does it benefit to tank the season? Like,
and when you put it all together, Keaton Slovis, as it stands right now,
is still your best option.
With Dart Hurt,
also,
is 100% the best option.
Also, look to the future. I mean, do you know how you ruin a quarterback? You throw him into the fire before he's ready to face it, and you get him mentally scarred by being overwhelmed. Like, do you want to throw Miller Moss out there and have him, like, ruin him as a quarterback the way the Jets ruin their quarterbacks every year? Because you throw them out there and they're not, A, not prepared, and B...
Well, isn't that what we talked about with JT Daniels? Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, the system was not working for
no.
him.
No, and
he was put in a no-win situation.
Yes.
As it stands now, that's not completely different from the situation that Miller Moss would be put in. But anyways, the other thing I want to mention is, so a lot of people were like, well, he could maybe will a comeback. Again, put yourself in the shoes of this coaching staff. You cannot assume you're going to be here next year. You don't care about the 2022-2023 Trojans. You care about this team. Who gives you the best shot? The guy who you've literally seen have multiple double-digit comebacks in his time at USC, Keaton Slovis, or a guy who was QB3 a week ago that has never taken a meaningful snap outside of that one time that
where he
Dart's
handed
helmet
the ball
came off.
Yeah. No,
like, just, like this has nothing to do with Miller Moss.
This is just strictly... No, all it is grasping at straws. It's just wanting something different. And I'm empathetic to that because I, too, sit here and say I would have rather watched Jackson Dart play this game than Keaton Slovis.
But again...
But also, like, let's be realistic here and let's, like, understand what the circumstances are. And,
yes,
and
the circumstances are... SC lost this game on defense because they couldn't make a stop.
Well, and SC lost this game on defense. It also lost this game in the offseason when they didn't fix this offense. The offense is still not up to the level that you need it to be. And you know, Graham Harrell owns whatever's going on in Keaton Slovis's head because he looks like a broken man at this point. And we know that he can play better than he's playing right now because we literally saw him do it. So, like, there's a development situation going on there. But it's just, you know, the USC lost this game in 1,000 different ways. And it doesn't all come down to, you know, change the quarterback and suddenly it's all going to be okay. Like,
bringing in Miller Moss was not going to help them stop
the fly. Would Jackson Dart have given USC a better chance in this game? Possibly. Might Jackson Dart have thrown 5 interceptions in this game? Possibly. Like, I don't know. All I know is that like, I think people are frustrated, and I get why they're frustrated, but there's also some unrealistic things that are getting thrown out there as the solution to a problem that doesn't... The solution has already been reached.
Well, that's
they
the
fired
other thing.
Clay Helton.
Yes.
And at least now we get to sit back and say, like, and I was saying, you know, Dante Williams gets to compete for this job until he loses it. Well, guess what? He just lost it. So now we can set that to the side and see, you know, look to the future.
I don't know. Alicia, I don't know if you remember, but Clay Helton lost, like, big to Oregon, and that didn't stop.
Yeah, but Clay Helton, as I keep saying, Clay Helton did not earn the job, and I was actually wanting Dante Williams to earn the job. Not that I wanted, but like that was going to be my standard. He, you know, he lost it. That's fine. Now you don't have to worry about it. But like the fact of the matter is, I got called out for like calling this a meaningless season because no season is meaningless. It's not meaningless to Drake London. It's not meaningless to those guys. But like, but also. This season with now an interim lame duck staff, like it's about as meaningless as they come though, because the solution is already like it's already in place. There will be a new coach by, you know, December, January. There will be a new coaching staff at that time. There will be a new era of USC football, and that era might be better or worse, but like the change is coming. We just have to go through this transition period where it's going to be kind of painful because there is no solution right now. There literally is no solution.
Yeah, and I know that's very not satisfying.
It's extremely not satisfying.
And we all want the satisfying resolution.
But I think that's also why I'm so... people always expect me to like to come on the CarCast and like rant and stuff. It's like there's nothing to rant about. There's not like there's it just
well,
is what it
like
is.
You could be like me and just
tip your cap to we could rant about Twitter and USC fans driving us crazy
by the way,
about the coaching search.
I hate being that guy who just gets on the podcast and bitches about Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't like
Yeah,
being
but
that
we
guy.
Like live on Twitter, so we this is just what we experience.
I just don't like being that
but,
guy.
But like either way, like I just sort of sit back and go, tip your cap to Oregon State. Make a mental note of who did and didn't fight the way that you want them to fight for your team and, you know, move on to next week, move on to the week after that. Like this staff will not be coaching these players next year. So, you know, I'm not trying to like turn people off of the season, but there's nothing more. To learn. The only thing you can sort of sit back as a USC fan and is hope that Mike Bone was paying attention to how much work actually needs to be done to turn this team into a championship contender.
Yeah.
Because right now they don't look it.
No. Anyways, Alicia, how excited are you for the Russian Grand Prix? Well, it is 2:13 a.m. The race is at 5 a.m., so... You're going to get in about 2.5 hours of sleep?
Oh, when you put it like that. That's not fun.
I think I'm going to end up pulling an all-nighter. So I'm excited because I get to watch the F3 race, the F2 race, and then the F1 race. I'm a sicko, okay?
You are way too excited and enthusiastic. Like, you are way too awake at this point. Like, I should... It's 2 a.m. I should not be awake right now.
It's going to be insane. We got Max starting at the back, along with Leclerc, and now Bottas, who has an engine penalty. Mm-hmm. He's taking it, too. Mercedes getting diabolical, giving him an engine penalty, so that way they can purposely try to block Verstappen from coming through the field. Lando Norris on pole, Alicia. Lando Norris on pole. Your guy, Carlos Sainz in P2. George Russell, for the second time this season, out-qualifies Lewis Hamilton in a Williams.
So you realize you're talking about a race that by the time people hear this will have already been done.
I don't care.
Okay, that's fine.
By the way, if you listen to this before the race...
No. Don't do that.
What?
Don't do that. No, people who are if you are listening to this and that race has not already happened, stop, turn it off, and go to sleep, please.
No.
Like, don't do that to yourself.
If you're listening to this before the Russian Grand Prix, tweet us with a code word. What is the code word, Alicia?
The code word is Sochi? I don't know. Is there a better code word?
I'm not a fan of it.
Hmm.
Tweet us the words code word. Yeah, there you go. Email us, text us, I don't know. Call into the rant line, 213-373-1872. That's the phone number. Email address, info@fanside.com. Alicia, final word, you got anything? Nothing? Nope? All right, cool.
The final word is pillow, as in I'm going to go lay down and cuddle my pillow and sleep.
All right, sounds good. You can get your 2.5 hours sleep for the race. All right, see ya.
See ya.
See ya.